demo. Sort of asking this to demo. So I would like Jim to share a few words about it.
Well, to many of us, Professor Pluskar needs no introduction, but I was asked to provide one. Professor Pluskar is the Shivadasani or Shivadasani visitor at the Vaishnava Center this term. He's professor in the Department of Asian Studies at the University of British Columbia. It's been my pleasure to know Ashoka Pluskar for many years. He comes from a very distinguished tradition of grammatical studies that still survives in Maharashtra. After studying Sanskrit at Pune University, he came to Harvard University, where he did his doctorate, and then moved out to University of British Columbia in Vancouver, where he's been ever since. Professor Pluskar is the great expert in the world on Bhartahari and the philosophy of Sanskrit grammar, and it's my privilege to ask him to give his lecture on a slightly different topic, perhaps, Lewis Carroll's Jabberwocky and Sanskrit.
Thank you for that very generous introduction. I normally stand up and speak, but since it's being recorded, I will sit down and talk, which is fine with me. No problem. We are here for some serious fun. Fun for me as far as the Sanskrit translation of a very well-known piece of English literature is concerned, and a serious situation for both you and me when that piece is viewed in terms of history and poetic or semantic theory. For those of you who may not be familiar with Jabberwocky or its author, Lewis Carroll, Lewis Carroll was the pen name of Charles Ludwig Dodgson, who lived from 1832 to 1898. He was a lecturer in mathematics at this very university from 1855 to 1881. He was a religious man, officially known as Reverend Dodgson. He made several contributions to mathematics and symbolic logic, but enjoys fame primarily for his literary output, which he almost never publicly acknowledged as his creation. His contemporaries agree in suggesting that he was a somewhat eccentric and withdrawn character, but gentle and sensitive. The Jabberwocky is a small part consisting of 6 verses, stretched to be 7, of Carroll's literary output. The story it contains is simple and one that could be said to be universal. A boy or diminutive hero vanquishes a gigantic foe. The poem is most commonly identified with the nonsense genre and a specific kind of wordplay. When I use the word nonsense here, it's technical. Well, it has become technical. That is, it means not lacking sense entirely, but it means a string of sense units that refuse to hang together, that act somewhat like Balkan states all the time, splitting apart. The story, as I have already summarized for you, this is going to be a very popular poem for all time to come. It was quite commonly taught in educated English-speaking families to the children. It has been used by philosophers, linguists, and literators. It is one of the most translated pieces of English literature, and its imitations with such names as football walkie and shaver walkie are not rare. A whole nonsense spin-off industry has developed around Lewis Carroll and the Jabberwocky, with the Jabberwocky at the center, to which many gifted minds with a sense of humor, including Lewis Carroll himself, have contributed. Normally, the thought of connecting Carroll or the Jabberwocky with Sanskrit would not occur to a scholar, especially to a scholar like me, who is more on the Sanskrit side, hardly finds time for English literature, and knew Carroll, barring some memory lapses, only as the author of what is commonly referred to as Alice in Wonderland. However, receiving undeserved acts of kindness has been the story of my life. One such act brought me in relation to Lewis Carroll, and I gradually discovered that Carroll, Jabberwocky, and Sanskrit are connected in several ways, with not a small involvement of Oxford, which makes it particularly appropriate that this lecture be delivered at Oxford. On 13th of June 1986, Mr. August A. Imholtz, Jr., president of the Lewis Carroll Society of North America, wrote me, "Dr. Alan Thrasher of the Library of Congress suggested that you might be able to help me. I am looking for someone who would be willing to translate Lewis Carroll's classic nonsense poem Jabberwocky into Sanskrit. Both Dr. Thrasher and Professor Wendy O'Flaherty are too busy to do it, and I wonder if you would be willing to undertake such a challenge. Furthermore, is there any possibility that the Jabberwocky poem has been used as a set text in Sanskrit composition exams in India?" When I received the letter, I had recently given up the headship of my relatively large, underfunded, and spatially challenged Department of Asian Studies. I was feverishly trying to make progress in my research writings, kept on the back burner for nearly 6 years. My writing in Sanskrit, which was galloping between 1958 and 1965, had practically come to a trot. Nor did I consider myself a poet or a master of Sanskrit metrics, a situation that has not changed. So for various reasons, I made no particular effort to respond to Mr. Imholtz's kind inquiry. Gradually, his letter went down and down in the pile of letters and reminders of commitments and errands that I consciously nurture on my desk. Nothing gets lost, but every item is taught some patience, and some need archaeologists to find them, but that's all. Fortunately, on 3rd of July 2000, Mr. Imholtz wrote me again, this time using the medium of email, which helps me in carrying out the aforementioned conscientious nurturing inside a computer. His message reflected the changed times also in that it used Wendy Doniger in place of Wendy O'Flaherty. Devoting about 2 months to reading Alice's Adventures in Wonderland and Through the Looking Glass, and to determining what made Jabberwocky found in the latter book tick, and what the numerous studies of Jabberwocky had to say about its words and interpretation, I completed my Sanskrit translation on 10th of September 2000, which is on the handout. This is the first and the last, in the sense of latest, connection of Carroll with Sanskrit through me. As it was being established, I had decided not to look at translations, and particularly at translations in other Indian languages, because the probability was that these translations would use Sanskrit or Sanskrit-sounding words and make my mind move in a narrow lexical area than it otherwise would, or make me incapable of realizing different translational strategies. However, my precaution turned out to be largely unnecessary. Only Alice's Adventures in Wonderland is translated into Indian languages. Through the Looking Glass, in which the Jabberwocky appears, has found Indian expression only in a Malayalam adaptation that leaves out the Jabberwocky. While Mr. Imholtz was kindly providing such information, it seemed unlikely to me that even a Bengali translation would not exist. I knew that we Marathas had fought the invaders and given our Bengali brethren ample time to cultivate their literature. After all, ours is a province of rocks, mountains, forts, and theirs of lakes and ponds. As a result of my inquiries at Oxford, Ohio, where I read a Sanskrit paper on Carroll's philosophy on 15th of September 2000, I learned from Professor Arindam Chakravarti, a past student of real Oxford, that a composition similar to Jabberwocky existed in Bengali. Dr. Mandakranta Bose, another Oxfordian, later made it available to me. It was authored by Sukumar Rai, the father of the distinguished movie director Satyajit Rai, popularly known in Bengal as Hayavarala. It follows the basic Jabberwocky technique to the extent of creating new words, but it cannot be called a translation. Subsequently, in November of the same year, through a chance conversation with Dr. Arun Satkar, I became aware of a Marathi rendering by Mr. Ajit Dongre of San Jose, California, done in 1990, that had remained unpublished. Mr. Dongre kindly obliged me by promptly sending a copy. His Jabdobandi was much closer to Jabberwocky than Sukumar Rai's verses. It followed the same storyline in the same number of verses. However, it took much more liberties with the coining and placing of neologisms than I had, and made little attempt to follow the annotations of Carroll scholars. Finally, on March 1, 2001, I happened to share a few minutes of a lunch break with Dr. Tithi Bhattacharya at the South Asia Colloquium in Seattle. Tithi confidently told me that Satyajit Rai had accomplished what his father did not, and did indeed have a Bengali rendering of Jabberwocky to his credit. She not only gave me a bibliographic lead, but living up to my expectation of a true Bengali, recited the whole translation for me. Later, when I got the written text, however, I could see, despite my ignorance of Bengali as a language, that what the later Rai had done was to retain some nonsense words virtually as they were in the original English. In his renderings, they had acquired Bengali grammatical and phonetic features, and they did not make sense in Bengali, but they were not Bengali nonsense words coined by following the principle in Carroll's original. This observation made me suspect if Rai had adopted a similar procedure everywhere and his version consisted only in attaching a Bengali sari or pallava to the English dress. My suspicion was removed in a qualified way by Dr. Sanjukta Gupta just a couple of days ago. She pointed out to me that Rai had indeed coined some words by adding some suffixes current in Bengali to onomatopoeic morphemes typical of Bengali, just as he had retained some English original nonsense words. The thought of translating in the sense of creating parallel non-English formations at places where the English had nonsense words had clearly occurred to Rai, but he had not implemented it consistently. My ambition as a translator was different. It was to use Sanskrit-sounding words agreeing with Carroll's strategy at exactly those places where he had employed the pseudo-English words. Thus, the Sanskrit lovers in the audience can be proud that Carroll's connection with Sanskrit through me is special. It has not only been an expansion of his interest to see his poem translated into classical Greek and Latin. He had expressed a wish in his lifetime that his Jabberwocky should be translated in these classical languages. But the Sanskrit translation is also, in the exact sense of the word, the first translation of his poem into any Indian language. As far as the learned members of the Lewis Carroll Society and I can determine at present, it is, as they used to say, in the fitness of things that the translation is in Sanskrit, India's premier cultural language. I did it after 14 years, but I did it. That's the important thing. Carroll's adult life spanned the early days of photography. We come to another connection now. He turned to photography as a hobby. In addition to his professional and literary writings, we are also fortunate to have copies of the photographs he took or were taken of him. Particularly interesting for this audience should be the fact that he photographed Friedrich Max Müller, the famous Orientalist, and his family. Later, Müller and Carol had a falling out, but there exists a likelihood that Carol came to know something relatively specific about Sanskrit, the Veda, etc., as a result of his contact with Müller. I do not know if he took the frequently printed photograph of Müller, the one in the lower part of which Max Müller signs himself as Moksha Mulara Bhatta. I don't know whether that particular photograph comes from Carol, but it's worth investigating. And here is a topic for a suitable dissertation at Oxford, if the archives are well preserved here. The possibility mentioned just now is turned into a probability by the words Jub Jub and Bandersnatch used in Jabberwocky verse 2, which indicate that Carol had a smattering of some Hindustani words, especially Bandersnatch. Bandar is clearly intended. The other strengthening piece of evidence, unproven but not disproven, is the possibility that Lewis Carroll knew Edward Lear, well known for his limericks. Carroll was a junior contemporary of Lear. The latter had visited India. At least some of the paintings he drew there are still available. We come to the next possible connection. In terms of motifs or themes, the only work of which I am aware in which Carol and Sanskrit have been brought together is Professor Wendy Doniger's Dreams, Illusion, and Other Realities. It has an illuminating discussion of the Red King's dream as Alice confronts it with Tweedledum as the commentator. It is not a coincidence that Professor Doniger has heavily used the Yoga Vasishtha, the longest and most poetic sermon ever written in the world, to make a single sentence point, namely that the world ultimately does not exist. It employs the device of dreaming within a dream, as Carol does, albeit for a different purpose and with significant differences of detail. An earlier version of the Yoga Vasishtha has emerged in the last few years under the name Mokshopaya Shastra. It will be my pleasure to point out in a few minutes, or maybe toward the end of this lecture, that a verse in this text has a rather precious connection in terms of strategy with the Jabberwocky. Carroll's books are remarkable for going against the trend of realism in storytelling, which was very much in vogue when they were written, for self-reflective rhetoric and for teasing the readers. At many points, Carroll emerges from his generally maintained inobtrusiveness as author and reminds the reader that he is there, noting the unfolding of the story. He becomes a commentator, sometimes anticipating the reader's questions and sometimes going beyond such anticipation. In a few cases, when he comes across what we may call a philosophically insoluble problem, he teases the reader by refusing to face the problem head-on or by diverting the reader's attention. One could read most of these features in the great Sanskrit epic Mahabharata, although the manner in which they appear is not exactly the same. Krishnadvaipayana Vyasa, the author of the Mahabharata, is also a character in the story he writes. Several of his sub-stories, like the famous Nala and Damayanti story, are introduced at points at which the readers are likely to query the development of the main story in a particular way. As applied Dharma Shastra, the Mahabharata brings up tough issues of ethics and morality and frequently leaves them open-ended even after considerable discussion and hints, so that the readers will be encouraged to contemplate on the complexity of the issues. Another remarkable feature of Carroll's two books to which I have made a reference is that animals are used to highlight the deficiencies or potencies of the humans. The animals become commentators on human folly in general, as they would, say, in the fables of Aesop, etc. While this theme does not connect Carol in general, in a general way, to Sanskrit literature such as the Panchatantra, it should be noted that Carroll is probably distinctive in that in his works, animals become commentators on human linguistic folly, in particular, especially on the ambiguities of the English language. To return to my translation, before you begin to hurl untranslatable words at me for the time I'm taking to introduce it, we first need to note that what makes a composition like the Jabberwocky tick. Without at least a basic understanding along these lines, it would be difficult to know why I have translated the way I have and established a new connection between Carroll and Sanskrit, and why I earlier made the claim that the Sanskrit translation is the first true or fully consistent translation. Naturally, much has been written on how the Jabberwocky affects its readers. Several observations are quite insightful, yet in my view, the existing literature can take some addition. Even glancing casually through handout that I have given to you, you will notice play with language. This play, as I have already mentioned, has been labeled nonsense type of play. As I have already noted in passing, here nonsense should be accorded the respect a technical term deserves. Some scholars have appropriately printed it with the initial N as a capital letter. Nonsense is not absence of sense or just a string of sense units. It contains linguistic forms that initially come across as words of the English language, but on reflection turn out to be unfamiliar. Secondly, the forms seem to make sense in the given context, but one cannot be sure as to what that sense is. It leaves you with a nagging feeling that you know something but cannot make out precisely what that thing is. Like Humpty Dumpty, they sit on a wall precariously and run the risk of disintegrating as words or meanings should they fall on this or that side of the wall. Consider, for example, the brillish sounds like cousins of brilliant, etc., but cannot be associated with a denotatum. One scholar writing on Jabberwocky has rightly observed that in its several words, referential meaning is lost and only a structural meaning is present. A few of the words that were first thought to be Carroll's coinages were later identified as Old English words or dialect words. Likewise, in the case of some of the strange words, we could say that they are genuine English words, but Carroll has used them in unattested and unrecorded senses. The bottle has been refilled, but we are not told what the refilling liquid is. Yet there can be no doubt that the fun of Jabberwocky is rightly associated by its readers primarily with Carroll's creative word masonry. A sense of what sound sequences are permissible or passable in English is obviously required on the part of the verse's composer. So also an awareness of the major role context plays in linguistic communication. A related concept that Carroll himself floated has been sometimes talked about as if it is a real theoretically defensible participant in the process through which the Jabberwocky engages us. This is the concept of portmanteau words. The term refers to the phenomenon of packing two meanings or reminders of two words in one word. For example, Carroll explained mimsy as coming from miserable and flimsy, and sleethy or slithy as coming from slimy and lithe, and wrote that such words are portmanteau words. Given the literal meaning of portmanteau, namely a case or trunk for carrying a cloak or apparel, a natural extension of the meaning of the term would be something that contains another thing in itself, a situation in which two or more items hang together. In the various examples of portmanteau words, the difference is merely one of sequence, not of essence. If I were to impart an Indian idiom to this concept, I will use the word Ardhanarishvara Shabda. a word consisting of two fused words like the hermaphrodite form of Lord Shiva. The researchers, Jones and Gladstone, in one of their books, The Alice Companion, have paid particular attention to the portmanteau concept. If one were to go by the occurrences they have collected of scholars using this term, there seem to be four slightly different phenomena covered by this word. I will not tax you with all these four, basically changing a letter at a time is the essence. We do not know if Carroll would have brought all these four different senses under one umbrella. However, we can grant the possibility by assuming that for him, packing of more than one meaning was the necessary as well as sufficient condition for a word to be a portmanteau. If a combination of meanings existed, the existence of traces of different words was not a crucial consideration. While this has been frequently appealed to in explaining how the semantics or the poetic process in Jabberwocky works, I'm personally not convinced that one really needs to posit this as a separate concept. It's an interesting joke played by Carroll on the on his readers. But in the actual process, I don't think our mind ever grasps the sentence constituents individually, and it's unlikely to grasp the sentence two sentence constituents at the same time. So, and I'm concerned with the actual communication process of the poem. Now, leaving aside this word side of the procedure of Jabberwocky, and moving our attention to the structure of the poem as a whole, we notice the second peculiarity of Jabberwocky. The first verse conveys the sense that some great commotion is taking place and some kind of episode is about to be narrated or is about to be unleashed. It is just that we do not come to know what the real or specific nature of that commotion is. The mention of strange creatures augments this feeling. In the following verses, several strange creatures are mentioned. Just as the faint identification of the characters, we don't know who the boy is, we don't know who is advising in fifth or sixth verse the boy. There is a very faint identification of the characters. For example, one scholar has said this other character speaking in the background is the boy's mother. I have taken it to be the boy's father. As the deceptively English words begin to pile up and the meter creates a sense of rapid movement, we latch on to only the genuine nouns and action words. This is at some point we begin to skip, in a way, the nonsense words. Although they may interest us, we constantly get this feeling that we are still not capturing what this whole composition is about. And therefore, we begin to latch on to what seems definite, as is human nature. Yo dhruvani parityajya adhruvam vinishevate. That's what the Mahabharata says. You have to catch on to what is certain. That's what we do, even in the interpretation. And then we say that, yes, definitely there is some dangerous encounter of a young hero who has ultimately vanquished an evil force. This aspect of Jabberwocky raises some interesting questions for poetic theory. And I have not really seen a satisfactory explanation of this particular way in which the poet affects us in English literary theory. That is, first of all, a lot of early English criticism has been what I would call impressionistic criticism. A reader reads a work and he tries to describe how the work has affected him. And frequently it's written in beautiful language. We agree with it because it's also our impression. But it's also, for coming from an Indian point of view, Sanskritic point of view, it's like writing poetry about poetry. And the linguistic basis of the work is not brought into the foreground. And given that, and a lot of different theories, but not really a theory that is all comprehensive, we really don't have an explanation of this second aspect of the process of Jabberwocky. And I think this Sanskrit poetics can provide some explanation of this. Now, this much about the semantic process. A reader initiated into Carolian circle is likely to experience. The process in the case of readers who have read other works of Carol and what his critical readers have written is, in my view, qualitatively different. We have to separate two different admirers of Carol. One is people like me who read it for the first time and have no intention of really researching it, enjoy it when someone is reciting it, and later on may analyze the process as I just now did. But there is a very committed group of Carol readers, you might call them hardcore readers, and they are their process now is quite different. If they did not allow Carol to pull their collective leg, they may not even think of toves, the word that has been used, as something like badgers. They are something like lizards, and they are something like corkscrews, very curious-looking creatures. Now, of course, this is being offered humorously, not seriously at all. But once they submit to Carol and this process, then this process acquires a kind of self-propelling aspect. The initiated readers either do not realize or remember that not all of Carol's strange entities are genuinely there in his words, or having known and become aware of that, they wish to continue along the same lines. As if I may use an uncharitable analogy, it's like the faithful getting tickets for a rock concert with great deal of effort, then going there, and not listening to the singers or the musicians, but shouting there all the time. That is, the sense of community overtakes instead of the text of the songs or the aesthetics of the songs. Active participation becomes an enjoyment in itself. For this second group of readers, the fact that Carol did feed his readers with tongue-in-cheek explanations becomes a part of their very being when they are in the Carol context. They contribute new products that can be called spin-off nonsense. You know, there is a whole secondary industry here. Now, coming finally to my translation. Prior to attempting my Sanskrit translation, I collected accessible English annotations on Jabberwocky in notes, the important ones from which I have reproduced under each verse on your handout. The intention in collecting the English annotation was, of course, to receive guidance on how I should translate. With my explanation of the presuppositions and the annotation that has been offered to you in writing, it should not be difficult for you to see the extent to which the Sanskrit version matches the original. I will therefore first simply read it. Bharjisha asi dinavabhasa chikka kritigna godhakilaka Abhramyamscha chidrankara ardre trunje giriparshvastah kinki shukastat ahata dhairya sarve bhuvan angu bhartarah gabhi dambarash chavani surma avamamschikka shishma purva dehyavadhanam jarbhari vakye matsunotvam karal karye Daunstra panktishu daunshakarishu grahana grahana kangshishu chagranakheshu dehyavadhanam kukkujujjute dayate virya yas sahasa akashe durat parihara dhukromandham chapalapanikam vanaramusham asisturparih kare grihitas chiram pumsalo ripuran vishtaha vishramotas tudamba mule Kshanam svikritasthena chintane, tasmin kurvati parukshamanane, jarbhari vakkas sarchir nayane, dhuma phutkritir ghapina vipinat, budbuda varshi sahasa gacchat, ekam ghatam anudvavughato, turphari shastram jhatati tattanav, ader antam yavat chekshmam, pranan grahnat sukham pravishtam, tyaktvaranye tasya kabandham, शिरश्चकृत्वा शस्त्रलम्बितं प्रत्यायातो वल्गद्विजयी सस्वजनं प्रति वार्ता शंसि. हतस्त्वया किं जर्भरी वाक्कः एहि परिष्वज परिसृततेजः वत्स वासरः कल्लाल्पोष्ठि कल्लं भल्यं शब्दोद्घोषि स्थितो हश्वसं सोन्तर्बाष्पा प्रमुदति चित्तो वर्धितवीरः एतद्गेव्यं स्फूर्तिदायकं भूयो भूयः सुधियां श्राव्यम्. फर्स्ट वर्स रिपीटेड अगेन इन द ओरिजिनल. भर्जिष आसी दिनावभासश्चिक्क कृतिग्ना गोधकीलका अभ्राम्यंश्च छिद्रंकारा आर्द्रे तृंजे गिरिपार्श्वस्था किंकिशुकास्तत आहत धैर्या सर्वे भूवन आंगुभर्तरा गभीडंभराश्चावनि सूर्मा अवमंश्चिक्का शीर्ष्णा पूर्वा. इफ यू हैव नॉट ऑलरेडी वंडर्ड व्हाई आई हैव रेंडर्ड लुईस कैरोल विथ लवेश कराल एंड जैबरवॉकी विथ जर्भरी वाक्कीय, यू शुड नाउ. Lewis Carroll was very good at creating new words by putting together parts of existing words, as you have seen. Even his pen name he devised by moving around the letters C-A-R-L-E-S-W-I and O of his real life name. You know, the pen name was devised this way. The Sanskrit word for such small parts is lava. Lewis Carroll was an Isha, master of such parts, and his personal name in Sanskrit is Lavesha. The next well-acknowledged fact is that the exact derivations and intended meanings of several words devised by Carroll are not known. Scholars have been unable to unravel them despite much effort. Thus, Carroll is a terror, a frightening or Karalo author, although his biographers tell us that he was a very sensitive, gentle person. Before I justify my rendering of the title Jabberwocky with Jarbhari Vakkiya, I should clarify that no certain explanation of the English title exists. It has come to be synonymous with intriguing or rapid nonsense talk, partly in accordance with the meaning of the verbal root jabber. But no universally or widely accepted etymological account of what the entire word can mean has been given by the author or anyone else. Even if the author had given such an account, we would not have been entirely sure that he meant it, because there are instances in which his explanations are clearly meant to continue the nonsense fun at the expense of the reader. I proceed by assuming the following as commonsensical. We cannot exclude the possibility that the title Jabberwocky, which has the appearance of an abstract noun, compare the formation of words such as apology, company, fallacy, remedy, and subsidy, contained a pun. At one level, it derived itself from the content or a main character of the poem, namely Jabberwock. At another level, it could have been intended to refer to the form or expression side, the texture of the poem, a verse composition that sounds like jabbering, that conveys its import mainly through sounds than through immediately meaning-bearing words, as if the word was jabber-talking. The Jarbhari Vakkiya part of the title occurred to me even before the amazing similarities I am going to point out in a few minutes presented themselves. As a reader of Sanskrit linguistic and philosophical texts, I was aware that Jarbhari, Turbhari, Ityadi had come to be synonymous with anarthaka, nonsense, or vanchaka, deceptive words. My first acquaintance with this compound, Jarbhari, Turbhari, Ityadi, was through a sarcastic remark found in the Sarvadarshana Sangraha quotation from Brihaspati's verses, which expound the materialist or Charvaka philosophy. Here the Charvaka is represented as speaking Jarbhari, Turbhari, Ityadi, Panditanam, Vachasmritam. Sarcastically, the Brihaspati there is saying that the way the supporters deceive ordinary people through speech that does not make sense, or speech that is meant to trick people. And the oblique reference is to the Rig Veda verse, as we will see. Then I became aware of what Patanjali says in his Mahabhashya under 2.1.1. Bahavo yi shabda yesham artha na vidnyayante jarbhari turbhari tu. Patanjali is probably one of the early references. Durga, a commentator of Yaska's Nirukta, describes the same phenomenon with the expression pravallita, puzzling, enigmatic. As I recall, there is a remark to the same effect in Shabaraz Mimamsa's Bhashya, although at the moment I do not have a precise reference. The part Jarbhari of the compound Jarbhari Turpari Ityadi happily sounds similar to Jabber. You see, the sequence of consonants is exactly the same. We can add to its stem Jarbhari, ending in short E, the common Sanskrit word watch speech. So if watch is added to jarbhari, which becomes vak before certain case suffixes and in certain composites. The suffix ka that I have added after watch vak is frequently added at the end of bahuvri compounds, the possessive or extrovertly adjectival compounds. Thus jarbhari vak ka, resembling jabber walk, is in sound, would have the following meanings if we follow the traditional commentators of the Rig Veda. One whose speech is bent or twisted. One whose speech is filling or supportive, that is, uniting, contributory to existing language, I will supply. Taken in meaning, A, we would have a fitting description of the character Jabberwock or Jarvarivakka now that comes to attack, making a description defining sound. In verse 4, the sound the Jabberwock makes is difficult to describe because several seemingly nonsensical words have been used. We can apply Jarbhari Vakka, if we want to stretch our imagination, to Kerol himself, who apparently enjoyed bending the English language. The second meaning, on the other hand, would suit only Kerol, who brought parts of different words together and gave the English language some strange new words. We can further add to Jarbhari Vakka the suffix ia that is commonly applied in the sense concerning, associated with, for a long time, as in asya vamiya or nasadiya. So we get the name Jarbhari Vakkiya. For my translation, I have naturally tried to select a meter that would capture the rhythm of the original and still leave me room to introduce wordplay at those places where Kerol had indulged in it. As far as I can judge, the meter of the original has a plasticity. Depending on the point in the narration of the story, the verses can be recited at slow pace or create a mock serious atmosphere, or they can be recited in a racy manner and match the action of or commotion contained in the composition. My Sanskrit meter, consisting of 4 quarters, each consisting of 16 moras, belongs to the Padakulaka type and is made most well known by a composition ascribed to Shankaracharya, Bhaja Govindam, also known as Charpata Pandirika, and so on. Rhyming in Sanskrit verses is always limited, although there were several types of rhyming that were known to Sanskrit poeticians, and they analyzed the phenomenon at great length. But for something to be sung, as say parts of Jayadeva's Gita Govinda, you find rhyming, but the rest of Sanskrit poetry is not particularly keen on using rhyming, because Sanskrit has music of another sort, that comes through inflection, through agreement of the noun and the adjective, and so on. So this is briefly the exposition of my way of approaching the translation. Now, as I have already indicated, and as the last page of the handout shows you, this Jarbhari Turpari expression and the word Jarbhari occurs in Rig Veda 10.1.0.6. And At one point, I thought my general knowledge gave me a good translation, Jarbhari Vakkiyam. I should not really look up this word Jarbhari, where it occurs. So many people had said it occurs in the Rig Veda and such place. But I thought, let me see if I can make sense of this word. And so I began to study this hymn, 10106. And I found that there were several interesting similarities with Jabberwocky here, not just this crucial word which the ancients had picked up as representing the obscure nature of the word. And one of the most pleasing coincidences was that the early Vedicists in the West had even thought that the author of this hymn was fabricating words, coming very close to what we think of Carol. And you will see this began with rote, this then Grassmann continued, who actually uses the word for fabrication. I have given you the quotations. Geldner also does the same thing, the sort of last complete translation of the Rig Veda we have. Wilson had translated these difficult verses. Griffith, in his popular translation, simply referred to Wilson. Geldner does not translate them. He says this sort of, it's just impossible, or there's no point in attempting a translation. And you see the remarks of Grassmann particularly. They are quite quite revealing. So this is one of the joys. That is, it's like you try to do something that's socially unacceptable, a crime. And then someone appears on the scene, you are doing a very great time-honored thing, so, being saved from a situation. So if I was committing the crime of translation in along this way, I have been found in good company when you study what's happening with 106. Sayana and several centuries before him, Venkata Madhava, have explained the entire hymn. And Venkata Madhava, who writes very briefly but very perceptively, gives us the paraphrase and does not indicate that there are serious problems with the hymn, because in the beginning he has stated in a general way that I'm not going to be able to explain everything. Sayana attempts a remarkable thing. He tries to derive every one of these words, that which especially in the middle of the him. And then at the end he says that, to quote exactly, it's very nicely worded remark, he says, Atra Ashvini Sukte Sarvanyapi Padani Durvyutpadani. In this hymn dedicated to the Ashwins, all words defy derivation. Asmabhir ding matram pradarshitani. I've just shown you the direction of doing it. Those who are more persistent can attempt with the help of the nirukta and the grammar. The other interesting thing is, Carol's Jabberwocky actually was completed nearly 25 years apart. He wrote the first verse, which becomes also the seventh verse, when he was 23 years old. And then he composed the middle verses. This point has not been made by Grassmann, Rode, Gold, Geldner. But if you look at Rig Veda 10106, you will find that it also has two distinct parts. The verses 5 to 8 are particularly like Jabberwocky. Very remarkably, most of the difficult words there are what Carol would have called portmanteau words. That is, you can suspect they are compounds, but compounds made by taking parts of two different words and putting them together. In Carol's poem, I spoke of faint characterization. The characters are not very clearly identified. In this hymn, the Ashwins are never explicitly referred to as Grassmann, or Gerner observes. And they are in the background only because the adjectives are in the dual number, we speak of the Ashwins. There you have a boy hero. The Ashwins are always young deities in the Veda who do things that are helpful to the world. They are the great benefactors of the world. So many similarities begin to emerge. And one begins to wonder whether Jung had something, on his side. There is an archetype which expresses itself. But here it has expressed itself in an amazingly similar manner. Or the other way of saying would be very dear to Indian hearts, everything ultimately goes back to the Veda. So this is what we have. Well, I have a couple of other sections which I will not get into right now, but thank you very much for listening.
Thank you very much, Ashok. That was great. I could lead with the first question. Most of us, perhaps less as kavis, more as sort of teachers or grammarians or whatnot, go straight for the commentary on a Sanskrit poem. Have you started to compose one, either serious or...
Well, the notes to some extent are...
I mean in Sanskrit.
It would not be difficult with the notes there. Yeah. That is, they will simply have to be put in continuous sentences. That's all. Thank you for the kind thought. Good.
Questions?
Is this sort of Rig Vedic Jabberwocky quite unique? Also, if you take the Taravaveda into account, is there no? Is the only thing of its kind within Vedic literature?
Not exactly. That is, the section I did not read is other anticipations of Jabberwocky in the Sanskrit tradition. It's a rather long section. And there I refer to the Kuntapa hymns of the Atharvaveda Parishishta. And Geldner, I think, refers to 2.39, is it, Rig Veda, which I didn't have time to check. Geldner says, the Kunts, these is Dishtas, Bestet, we in 2.39 in einer Fühler von Vergleichen. So that may be another place. It also is a question of folk tradition and other things. One can see a number of connections, but nothing as close as this Jarbhari Turpari. It's remarkably close. Even the reference to the sword, handheld, instrument, is there.
does Sayana's commentary on it seem to us to really elucidate anything, or is he just sort of flailing around desperately?
He is desperate in 5-8.
I see.
These four ricks. Mm-hmm. He's. But he takes the context, into consideration, and he gives a meaning that makes a complete context, as Carol would have expected his readers to do. Mm-hmm. So the strategy adopted is essentially the same. That is, these are Ashwins, and they are to be interpreted in a consistent way. It also, throws light on how Sayana must have composed his commentary. That is, Sayana I'm using as really as a head pandit for the commentary. I think it was a committee that was desperately trying to save Vedic interpretation. He was overseeing the whole work, maybe giving final touches of making everything look uniform. That's possible. He borrows almost all crucial explanations from Venkata Madhava and then adds his own in several places.
Just briefly, a small question. One of the things people have always noted about Jabberwocky is how extraordinarily evocative these funny words are taken altogether, even when they shouldn't be. and you get people arguing about whether Brillig actually sounds like what Carol says or whether it sounds like something else that has a neat reaction to Brilligness. Do you think that works, just out of interest, in the Rig Vedic text? I mean, is there an evocativeness that you get from the words that don't make sense in terms of the semantic units they seem to hold? Do you think it works? It's not poetry, obviously.
If you go by Indian associations with sounds, the associations in the Sanskrit tradition with particular sounds, to some extent you might be able to see that evocativeness there. But because of the huge temporal difference, you know, when the Vedic is composed, it's very difficult to be sure whether we are imagining this or it was really there. In the case of English words, at least for half of them, we can advance plausible explanations. That's not possible in the case of the Vedic words. And that's where the problem is. One could do it. That is, one thing I haven't had time to do yet is to use the reverse index and find out how many of these problematic words have parallels. That is, words ending in the same way. That may give us some kind of tool to see where the word boundary lies. You know, that is, and then we can see how these portmanteau words have been fashioned in the Vedic. That they are like that, we need not doubt. Statistically, the case can be made, although we do not have traditional confirmation of it.
It looks like we have a lot of young Luke forms here.
Yeah.
Reduced
yes.
intensives.
Yes.
With the heavy.
In between 5 and 8, you mean? Yeah.
Yeah. Jarbury, Drupadi.
Yeah. Yes. But there again, you will see there is no clear sign of reduplication. See?
No, but I mean...
Jabhara, etc., if you took, then there is some...
Sure, it's wrong. It's the wrong consonant, but you still have what looks like... I mean, you have the same vowel, and you have an R,
yes.
which is you sometimes get in the reduplicated syllable of an intensive. That the R,
yes.
Vigor root, either one, is an infix.
That, you see, in Parparika, Parparika, there you have a reduplication sign. In Rik 6.
Yeah. I mean, you lose the reduplication. You lose the aspiration in Jarbari and Turpari, whatever, and
yes.
Turpari. And you.
Yes, that's indirect result of seen in the reduplicative
yeah.
syllable. Yes, you do see.
I mean, I'm not suggesting that's what these things are, but the association
yeah.
of
yes.
those young Luke forms
mm-hmm.
seems to come through there.
Okay.
Of constant or intensive activity.
That's one thing, but also in the Jabberwocky, we see these onomatopoeic words frequently appearing. So, if something like charcharam.
Yes.
Parparika is supposed to be an imitation of a sound, then we would not know whether it's grammatically reduplication or just onomatopoeia.
And Tartarita.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Good. Please.
No temptation to translate Jabberwocky as
Jagannath? As?
Jagannath.
Sorry, I miss what you're suggesting.
Jagannath.
Oh, Jagannath. Yes.
Jagannath.
No, that the word has come into English already as Jagannath. Carols?
Mm-hmm.
No, in the late 19th century, second half of 19th century. Please, Carol. Jagannath. This one is closer in terms of phonetic. We can attempt another translation. It took me 2 days. After I had done the annotation, it took me 2 days to finalize the translation. You know, write it and finalize. So, I had several options I had to discard. Please, I have.
You mentioned a kind of psychological effective reading nonsense Jabberwocky that one kind of jumps to grasp onto those words that do make sense. And if I understood you were saying, it seems that Indian aesthetics would have much to say about that process. Was that what you were getting?
Yes, I did not find any real explanation or a strong awareness of this phenomenon in the Kerol scholars. And what I was going to say in my penultimate section, this is almost like a monograph growing, you know, several pages. There are five or six chapters in it. And one of the chapters would be how to account for this phenomenon. It will be accounted for by what the dhwani theorists in the Sanskrit poetic tradition call abhidha mula vyanjana, you know, where several words come collectively, sometimes through their double meaning, and sometimes just through their juxtaposition, give you a second meaning all the time. So, for those of you who may not be familiar, are there any who have were not studying Sanskrit or have not studied Sanskrit? There arose a theory in about 8th, 9th century Kashmir, which has been very influential, that a word functions through three different modes. And there is a direct meaning that is conveyed by the mode called abhidha. Then a secondary or metaphorical meaning that is conveyed through lakshana. So the example most commonly given is something like Gangayam Ghoshaha. There is a hamlet on the Ganga. Now, if you take the literal meaning of the word Ganga, it refers to a particular river. And that would be conveyed by the Abhidha mode. But when you have the phrase Gangayam Ghoshaha, you realize that the hamlet cannot literally be on the river or in the river. And therefore, what it means is very close to the Ganges, on the bank of the Ganges. And so from the literal meaning of Ganga, the flow of a particular river, you move to a related metaphorical meaning, something very closely associated with the Ganga, namely its bank. And then the third question arises, why is the person using Gangayam Ghoshaha? Instead of saying Ganga Tire Ghoshaha, why is the person saying Gangayam Ghoshaha? And then you say this metaphorical or secondary use is prompted to convey that the hamlet is so close to the Ganga that it gets some of the sanctity of the Ganga, or it gets the coolness of the Ganga. And so that coolness or sanctity is the suggested meaning, which is conveyed through a third mode of expression. Then this suggested meaning can arise directly from the primary meaning or from the secondary meaning. And so when it arises from the primary meaning, it's called abhidha mula vyanjana. Vyanjana is suggestion, mula root, suggestion rooted in the literal meaning of the word. And when it arises from the secondary meaning, it's naturally called lakshana mula vyanjana. These technical terms are very clearly used. So in abhidha mula vyanjana, from the primary meaning, through the collective impact, you go to the suggested meaning, which I think is the process happening in Jabberwocky. And for that, you don't even have to know all the meanings of all the individual words distinctly. If they work in combination, they are mutual helpers. So that would be one way of explaining. The context becomes important, in other words.
Well, thank you once again for a wonderful lecture. And there are other lectures that Professor Akhutkar will be giving this term. I don't have the list with me right now, but I believe that it's on the Indology
On next Thursday, one at 2 o'clock, another at 5.
Oh, I'm sorry, could I ask you to tell us what they are?
Yes, the one at 2 o'clock is Yoga and Vyakarana. It's a seminar. And
that will be at the Vaishnava Center.
Yeah, yes, that's correct, at 2 o'clock on Thursday. And the one at 5 is Philosophy's Linguistic Turn, Nagarjuna and Bhartrihari.
Well, thanks, Fred.